Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And good Monday morning, everyone. No, this is not Tim. Tim is away today. Fred Jackson sitting in for Tim. But with me, as usual, is Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning, Fred. Good Monday morning.
Good to be here. We are live and direct on Facebook as well.
That's correct. Facebook Live on the Today's Issues Facebook page.
All right. And we're getting lots of likes on our Facebook page.
Yeah, we've gained a lot of followers, our likes the past few months since we've been doing Facebook Live. And also our listeners love it because they can go to our Today's Issues Facebook page and read more about the stories we talk about.
Right.
You know, because a lot of people, you know, we cover so much on the show, on the fly, they go, well, where can I read about that? I want to read about that. And so what we provide that on the Facebook page. Are we post all the stories on the Today's Issues Facebook page.
And lots to talk about. Been chatting with various people this morning, and it seems, at least for yesterday, people were either watching the Daytona 500 race or the Oscars last night or none of the above. So what camp were you in?
Well, I was in the latter part of the Daytona 500.
Okay.
As I mentioned last week on the show, my friend and fellow worker here, Randy Sharp, he and I were working on my son's baby bed. He's helping me build my son's, who's yet to be born, Luke, my son, we've already named him. He'll be born in June. Uh-huh. But Randy and I are building the baby bed. He's a master craftsman. He does an amazing job. Uh-huh. So he's teaching me, you know, all the ins and outs of woodworking. And we finished up some what we were working on yesterday, and there was two laps left on the Daytona 500.
Uh-huh.
And we walked in there and watched the last two laps. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Watching those cars.
And there was a first-time winner, someone, I guess a name that a lot of Daytona 500 people might know, but I was just watching something this morning. Apparently, it was a first win for this particular driver.
Yeah, it was. I want to say it was Kurt Busch.
Was it?
Yeah,
I believe so. Busch, last name. Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, as I said, a lot of other people, but not as many as in other years, watching the Oscars, and we're going to be talking about that in a few moments. For first, I want to bring you up to date what happened politically this past weekend. And I suppose the big news was the Democratic National Committee elected its new leader. And he is former Labor Secretary Tom Perez. But there was a lot of interest in this, both Republicans and Democrats, because the two lead candidates were Tom Perez and Congressman Keith Ellison, who was the first Muslim elected to our Congress. Mm-hmm. And so we want to capture for you a little bit of the announcement that came on Saturday. Now, the first voice you're going to hear is Donna Brazil. And she was kind of the acting chair of the DNC. And they've been looking for a leader now for several months. And then you'll hear the voice of Tom Perez. And then you'll hear the voice of Congressman Keith Ellison. Because what Perez did, basically, and you'll hear this, he won, Perez. But then he, in making a, kind of the victory lap of his own, announced that he was appointing Keith Ellison, Congressman Keith Ellison, to be the deputy chair. So let's capture a little bit of this announcement, and then we're going to come back and talk about this a little bit.
Let me give you the final results. The threshold for victory was 218 votes, 435 members were total in voting, including proxies. The results are 235 for Mr. Perez and 200 for Mr. Ellison.
I would like to begin by making a motion. It's a motion that I have discussed with a good friend, and his name is Keith Ellison. And the motion I would like to make to the body is a motion suspending the rules, if I may, to appoint Keith Ellison, deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I just want to say to you that if you came here supporting me, if you're wearing a Keith t-shirt or any t-shirt, I am asking you to give everything you got to support Chairman Perez.
We need to make house calls. We need to listen to people. We need to get back to basics, and we need to move forward, because I am confident, my friends, I am confident that when we lead with our values and lead with our actions, we succeed. That is what the Democratic Party has always been about, and that is what we will continue to be about.
You have it, that last voice there being former Labor Secretary Tom Perez, who is now the chairman of the DNC. And as I mentioned, he appointed Congressman Keith Ellison, a Muslim from Minnesota, to be his co-chair. And Walker, the bottom line in all of this, the Democratic Party lost big time in the election last November. There is a fairly large element within the Democratic Party who blamed the loss on the fact that the party had forgotten about the people between New York, the state of New York, and California, and that Trump had come in and had filled that vacuum. A lot of people thought that, you know, the Democratic Party has got to move back towards the center a bit. But in electing Tom Perez and with Keith Ellison being a Muslim with some pretty serious connections with some very radical Muslims groups in his background, people were scratching their head. What is this party doing? But it is, you know, you heard Tom Perez there speaking, you know, getting back to our values, et cetera, et cetera. But you see, Perez had the support going into this weekend vote by former President Obama, from Hillary Clinton. Keith Ellison had the support of Bernie Sanders. All of those part of the far left of the Democratic Party. So you have yourself, you know, the political analysts are scratching their heads this morning. If this party wants to win an election again, make some ground in 2018 and maybe take the White House again in 2020, these don't seem to be the players to take you to that dance.
No, and it's an odd scenario because you have, like you mentioned, some in the party are saying if we want to actually win elections and get things done, we're going to have to move a little bit back towards the center. Right now they're on the left and far left, that being said. But Tom Perez and both Keith Ellison and Tom Perez were both – they're both far left. So there wasn't really, to my knowledge, maybe one of the lower candidates for this position, there wasn't really a center-left candidate. So it was interesting, and not to mention they surprisingly went paper ballot when traditionally they go electronic ballot. And they were several hours behind. I was watching Fox News when they were covering this. They were covering CPAC and the DNC chair elections. And the DNC chair elections were 3-4 hours behind, and they were doing paper ballot. I'm just wondering if there was some politicking going on there towards the end to get the far left Bernie Sanders people to come over and vote for Perez.
Well, I tell you what, and I think the reason for the paper ballot is that there is still deep division. Now, Perez tried to address that by naming Ellison as the co-chair, but you gotta know a little bit about Keith Ellison. He is so far out there. And at one point, he worked with Louis Farrakhan, Nation of Islam, extremely, extremely anti-Semitic, that group. Now, Ellison tried to paper over that back in 2006. He wrote a letter of apology to the Jewish community. Many people would say, well, that's just to help him get elected. Alan Dershowitz is a Democrat, fairly well-known lawyer. And he was being interviewed this morning on Fox News about this. Now, he's okay with Perez, but he said Ellison, he threatened to rip up his membership in the Democratic Party. He mentioned that here's how far left Ellison is, in that he voted against the Iron Dome. Now, that's referring to the protection, United States military protection, a device over the nation of Israel, basically intercepting missiles that would come in from Gaza or come in from Lebanon or Syria, whatever the case may be. Keith Ellison voted against that.
Right.
So this is the caliber of individual the Democratic is not only just comfortable having as a member, mm-hmm. but believes he should be in a leadership position.
Right. Yeah, and this is interesting because this is really good. The Republicans should be happy right now. They should be rejoicing, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. because it was really two bad choices from a Republican standpoint. The Democrats may like Perez and Ellison, and that's fine. But you have Perez, who is essentially an Obama clone, or you know, he's been approved of by President Obama and Hillary Clinton. Well, under Hillary Clinton and President Obama's leadership, Democratic statewide offices were decimated. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's a negative aspect if you're viewing it from a Republican standpoint. But then you have Keith Ellison, who is farther left than any of them, and he would have more pushed the party away from the centrist, your average Joe voter. And so there was really no it's good news, so to speak. And President Trump tweeted over the weekend,
yes.
You know, I'm happy. I don't know whether he was being sarcastic or serious, but he said, I'm happy for the Democrats for electing the DNC chair, and I'm also happy for the Republicans.
Yes.
So I bet there was some sarcasm there.
And here's what he tweeted. Here's a direct quote. Congratulations to Thomas Perez, who has just been named chairman of the DNC. Again, this is a tweet from Trump on Saturday. I could not be happier for him or for the Republican Party.
That has to be sarcasm.
No kidding. But look at what the Democratic Party is doing since the election. You know, they had the vote for who is going to be the leader, the minority leader for the Democrats in the House, and they put Nancy Pelosi mm-hmm. back in there. There was a Democrat congressman from Ohio, I believe it was able to garner about 60 votes. And he is one of the ones that's been leading the charges amongst Democrats. Look, we've got to change, right. Or we're going to be forever doomed to be a back burner party. And as I say, there's a reason why Donald Trump is celebrating. He's not the only one. Many Republicans were saying going into the weekend, hey, go Ellison. This is exactly the kind of individuals that we want. And Thomas Perez, far left. Mm-hmm. Worked in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, where he took up far-left policies, and then he became labor secretary for Barack Obama, again, a big union guy.
Right.
So this is the old Democratic Party, which the country rejected.
Mm-hmm.
So all that President Trump has to do over the next few years. And we're already seeing it. Look what's happening in the stock market since Election Day. It's at historic highs.
Mm-hmm.
You look at what's happening with industry out there, and the reason the stock market is doing so well is because industry is extremely optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Trump has pledged, and we're going to learn a little bit more tomorrow night because President Trump will be making his first speech to a joint session of Congress.
Will that be like the State of the Union?
Kind of like the State of the Union, but they're not calling it that.
Okay.
But it's going to be. He's going to outline. I heard him talking this morning to a group, and he's going to be outlining his economic package.
Okay.
And his economic package, his whole incentive is, let's get rid of these regulations that's been holding business down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's deal with bad trade deals.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of thing he was saying during the election campaign. So we know these policies that he's going to bring in are the things that got him elected.
Yeah, exactly. And that's interesting you note that now because I was thinking, you know, and folks, let me remind you, not everything's about politics. I mean, there are actually hardworking Americans out there that need help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need Obamacare repealed. They need a better healthcare system. They need a higher wage. They need better insurance. There are real life issues, real life people being affected out there. But I'm viewing this from a purely political standpoint. The Democratic Party has been running on minority politics for the past 8 years, meaning that they tailor their sole message to minorities, which is not always a bad thing. But you just look at wrote some things down. Illegal immigration, okay? They tend to fall on the side of illegal immigrants. Well, those folks legally aren't supposed to vote, and there's not that many of them in comparison to other classes. They focus on climate change. Well, if you poll the average American, I mean, America's pretty split on climate change. It's not an overwhelming majority, so that's not very smart politics. And then they focus solely and intently on the LGBT issues, which is 2 to 3, maybe 4% of the population that actually votes according to that. And so these minority politics, you wonder why they keep losing elections, is because they're not even appealing. They can't even agree to appeal to average working class Americans. You know, the climate change deal pushes all your coal workers and your truck drivers and your energy sector jobs, pushes all those voters over to the Republican side, and they wonder why they can't win elections.
Well, and this is it. You know, you mentioned about the coal industry. You know, the Obama administration just torpedoed the coal industry in this country. So along comes, you know, President Trump now, and one of the first things he did, he had a bunch of coal miners come and visit him in the Oval Office. And it was a tremendous political optics, no matter whether you voted for Donald Trump or not.
Right.
There was the President of the United States meeting with a couple of the guys dressed in their coal mining uniforms, as it were. And so it was terrific optics. These are people who have voted Democrat for the most part. They're represented by a Democrat, the West Virginia folks, in Congress. So those were the optics. Now, we had news late last week where the Dakota Pipeline is going to start shoving oil through that pipeline within 2 weeks.
Wow.
You're going to have oil flowing through there. That's going, and then the completion of Keystone is going to be thousands of jobs, and as President Trump has repeated over and over again, they're going to use American-made steel pipe for that. So you've got all of this happening. Now, just imagine, you know, Lord knows what's going to happen in the future. But if these things are happening, if jobs are being created, if more companies come out and say, hey, we're going to shut down a plant in Mexico, or we're not going to go ahead with the move to Mexico, or whatever the case may be, we're going to keep these plants alive, we're going to expand our plants here in the United States, then you come to 2018, and what do the Democrats have to run on?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a good point you make there, because if President Trump, as you said, if he continues this record, which is a good record, I would say, as far as appealing to voters with these issues, then you're going to have the Democratic Party. What do they can't even agree on jobs with Trump. They can't agree on anything, and so they're totally alienating the voting class and the workers. And I think it's my projection that if President Trump continues these policies, these American policies, then in 2020, I think his margin of victory will probably be much larger if he continues to bring your average Joe over from the Democratic Party over to the Republican Party.
You have a lot going on in the country right now. There's such a mood shift, and there's such a suspicion of the left media. There's a suspicion of the Democratic Party because putting Pelosi back in as minority leader, Chuck Schumer in the Senate. This is the old Democratic Party, which I believe the voters were saying and rejected in this last election. There is the great suspicion, as I say, of the media. The media does not have the power. In fact, tell us a little bit. This morning, former President George W. Bush, apparently he's in New York to promote his new book, but he was interviewed on NBC. And you know, despite some of the headlines you might see on this story this morning, he kind of put, it was a Matt Lauer, I believe it was, in his place when it came to me. Tell us a little bit about that interview.
Yeah, it was an interesting exchange, but the first headline I saw this morning was former President Bush takes jabs at President Trump. And so I thought, well, interesting. It really wouldn't surprise me. Well, I clicked on the story and actually watched the interview, and there were no jabs at President Trump, but that's the kind of narrative that the media wanted to build up. But here's kind of what I noticed as I watched, I believe it was about a 6-minute interview that was supposed to be about former President Bush's book. He has a new book out about wounded veterans, et cetera. Here are three questions that were asked of the former president. He was asked about the temporary travel ban from 7 majority Muslim countries. He was asked about the conflict with the media between Trump and the media. And he was asked about Russia and the reported Russia and Trump connection, of which has not really been verified other than by unnamed sources. That's important to mention. But I noticed throughout the 6-minute interview, there was not one question about his book. It was all questions about trying to pit him mm-hmm. against the current president, Trump, now, so they could make a headline out of it. And I also noticed, as I read the transcript, they totally left out a quote by President Bush, former President Bush, where he said, Matt Lauer asked him about the conflict, as I mentioned, with the media. And here's what President Bush said. Quote, "The news media is so split up. When I was president, you mattered more. There were three of you." And so what he's referring to there is, when I was president, there were 3 to 4 or 5 major news outlets, your ABC, your CBS, your Fox News, and your CNN. They were the bigwigs in town, and nobody else, your smaller news outlets, didn't get a voice.
Uh-huh.
Well, what President Bush is saying now is, there's many news outlets, and you're not the bigwigs in town anymore. But I noticed the Today's Show totally left that out of the transcript.
Well, I just happened to catch that portion of the interview this morning, and the look on Matt Lauer's face when former President Bush came back with that you three guys, you know, the three major, CBS, NBC, ABC, don't matter that much anymore.
Right.
And it was like, and former President Bush was exactly right. They don't mm-hmm. matter as much anymore. You look at President Trump. I mean, he's not even relying on Fox or Drudge,
right.
You know, so those more conservative news outlets, or Breitbart. He's relying on his Twitter account.
And here's one thing I've noticed, even working here at American Feminist Association, is when you get a media request, a written media request, you really have no control over your message to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you control what you say to the media outlet in the interview, but then they can take that and put it in whatever kind of context and put any kind of, you know, they put their opinion before and after that totally contradicts what you said, end quote. And so, but I think that's the issue, is why would President Trump go to these media outlets that have totally been slandering him for the past 2 years and rely on a fair shakedown on a story, whether it be good or bad?
Yeah.
And so what he's doing, he's going directly to the American people
mm-hmm.
and to these lower news outlets, and he actually gets his accurate, quote, accurate story out there.
Well, and again, I think there's just a mood in this country. They're fed up with the mainstream liberal media. They don't mm-hmm. trust them anymore. One of the things coming out of the Oscars last night, and it's becoming the norm with Hollywood attacking President Trump. But you know, it's the American people are saying, we don't care. We don't trust your opinion anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Meryl Streep is still a darling of many people who respect Hollywood, but for the most part, people don't care.
Mm-hmm.
The Oscars last night, apparently they had a real mess up on announcing the best picture of the year. This I've never seen this happen before.
Was that the red envelope?
Yeah, the red envelope.
It's on the head page of Drudge right now.
They got it all mixed up. They announced that, was it La La?
They have a Steve Harvey moment?
Yeah, Steve Harvey moment. And then they find out, whoops, we've announced the wrong movie. And the one that actually won is Moonlight. Which is very politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
I think Hacksaw Ridge, which I think made much more money.
That was a very good movie.
That's the Mel Gibson movie.
Right. About the war hero.
One of the few that I actually went to a theater to see last year. But that got a few awards. But again, there's just this mood in the country. We're fed up with the far left.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to pay attention to you anymore. You can whine and complain. We know what your game is.
Right.
We know what your game is. You're trying to distinguish conservatism, and we're just not going to put up with it anymore.
Yeah, and I noticed the in the last 16 years, the Oscars had the third lowest ratings, preliminary ratings, last night.
Yep.
Out of last 16 years, and I think that's because why would Americans who maybe agree with President Trump's policies want to watch a show, an award ceremony, where they totally bash the president? And I think Americans are just, they're watching the Daytona 500.
Ah, they are. We're back in just a few moments.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examined.
How are we going to make disciples, which is what Jesus told us to do? He didn't say just make believers. He said make disciples. If We are not disciples ourselves.
We'll also hear from Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning, as well as newsmen Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. That's all on the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139, it says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you. From AFR.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Liberty University's in the business of training champions for Christ, the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 500 programs of study, along with an online degree program designed for thousands of active duty and military veterans. Beyond the classroom, students meet together weekly for worship and to hear from some of the nation's leading experts in the arts, politics, and business. Liberty University, committed to academic excellence with a Christian worldview.
They're calling it the biggest Oscar disaster in history. The Academy Awards announced the wrong winner for Best Picture. The folks who play make-believe for a living were so busy insulting President Trump, somebody forgot to check the names on the envelopes. PricewaterhouseCoopers apologized for the mix-up, but Hollywood deserved a bit of comeuppance after spending the entire night insulting the president. Iranian filmmaker Ashgar Farhadi was the worst. He was the winner of the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film. Mr. Farhadi boycotted the show to protest President Trump's temporary immigration ban. A statement read on his behalf called the ban inhumane and disrespectful. What's inhumane and disrespectful is blowing up innocent people and chopping their heads off. I've said it once and I'll say it again. If Hollywood is so infatuated with Islamic radicals, they ought to hold next year's show in downtown Tehran. Let the Ayatollahs handle the envelopes. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And yes, we are back. Kind of the fill-ins today, aren't we, Walker?
We are. We're Team B. We're the B team.
B team. Fred Jackson and Walker Wyman sitting in for Tim and Ed and Abe. And you may be asking, where are those folks? Well, a lot of our folks this week are in Orlando, Florida. No, they're not all going to the theme park. It is the convention of the National Religious Broadcasters, Walker. And a number of our shows will be coming from down there starting tomorrow. And it's the first NRB since President Trump elected, and I'm sure that's going to be the talk of the place down there.
Absolutely, and I want to make a note. I want to brag on my grandfather, Don Wildman, who started this ministry.
Mm-hmm.
He is receiving the NRB Hall of Fame Award this week on Thursday night. I'll be going down there to watch that, and it's just encouraging, you know, being so much on the inside, so to speak, of what all my grandfather started through God's help, of course. It's kind of refreshing to look back on what all he's done. You get so busy in the day-to-day work, but God's really used him to lead this ministry. And so, yeah, he's going to be receiving a prestigious award down there in Orlando this week.
And I couldn't think of anybody else who would deserve it more than your granddad, Don Wildman. Yes, I work here, but I have admired through the years. I've been here about 20 years now. And just to see how God is blessed because of your granddad's faithfulness. And I tell people these stories. One of the things I observed, because I worked for a major corporation before, you never even saw the founders and CEOs at all.
Right.
But I remember coming here, and your granddad I started early in the mornings, always have, and he would be one of the first people in the building, though.
Yeah.
And he would come in, and he didn't turn on the lights until Brother Don comes in, and he turns on the lights, and, and in the wintertime, cranks up the heat a little bit, mm-hmm. And if it's summertime, maybe bring down that air conditioning a bit,
yeah.
But also the last to leave at night.
Right.
Turn the lights out. And you may think, what is the founder of the organization going around and doing that? But yeah. That's just the way it was. You know, he founded it on his dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it all got started.
Yeah. And he knew he had to be tedious with his money and tight with the money because, and as I remind people often, is this isn't our money that we're operating this ministry with. At first, it's God's money. And then secondly, it's our donors, our listeners, our supporters who send in their hard-earned money for us to operate this ministry. And so we need to operate it with the interest of our supporters in mind. And my grandfather's always done that.
He has always done that. It's just amazing fiscal policy that he never moved forward mm-hmm. unless he had the money to do so.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that because the ministry's only been in debt one time,
mm-hmm.
and that was right when we began. My grandfather took out a small loan, paid that back in a short time period. But yeah, we operate on if you don't have the money to pay for it policy, then you don't get it.
Gee, you know, we all can take a lesson from that mm-hmm. These days when there's so much credit out there. But also speaking of that, the American Family Association, American Family Radio, has repeatedly won the highest awards for fiscal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We have the stamp of approval from those auditors that come in that the money is being well spent.
Yeah.
Where we tell people the money is going, that's where it goes.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's and we're right. now, what, 185 stations?
Yeah, about 185. This week, actually, we should be going on in Jacksonville, Florida.
And that is so cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
A big market there, a lot of new listeners to be reached. And so it's good news.
And put on that station in the last year up in the Washington, D.C. area. Mm-hmm. We've been really excited about that.
Yeah, right in the D.C. market. Catch some of our politicians that don't listen to us.
They got to drive those cars into work in the morning, you know, along that as an Interstate 66 that goes into D.C. from mm-hmm. Virginia where all the people live. And so they're now hearing the voice of American Family Radio. And again, thanks to you folks for doing it. We would not be here unless you folks were as faithful as you have been
mm-hmm.
now for many years in American Family Radio. Hey, I was just watching. You know, one thing I've admired about President Trump is despite all of the attacks from the media and even, you know, some Republicans too, that he has just steamed ahead with his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been meeting with all these different groups. And today, he's been meeting with some of the CEOs of the big insurance companies, and this is all in preparation for the replacement or repeal or both, mixture of both, of Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just interesting. If you listened, who was saying this the other day? The guy from Breitbart. I forgot his name, who's now his one of his chief advisors.
Bannon. Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon.
At CPAC, maybe?
He was at CPAC. He said something very simple but very true. He said, if you listen to the speeches Donald Trump gave during the election campaign, that's what he's doing.
Right.
He said he laid out his plan for the next 4 years during the election campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of the big issues was repeal, replace Obamacare. And there he is today. Members of Congress are back in Washington, and that's high on the agenda. And we are very blessed in our news service here at American Family Radio to have a guy who's been covering this whole Obamacare debate for a long time. He is Chris Woodward, and Chris is joining us right now. Chris, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm filling in for Steve. Yes.
That would be true.
Okay.
That would be true. So, okay, where are we? In all of this, because we're hearing mm-hmm. the banter back and forth about, you know, is it going to happen? There seem to be at least a couple of things. How long is it going to take?
Mm-hmm.
And what's it going to look like when we're all done?
Well, the short answer is Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is still the law of the land. However, mm-hmm. according to one of President Trump's first executive orders, that was the one that would ease the so-called economic burdens of Obamacare. You don't have to pay the mandate penalty or whatever a lawmaker might want to call it. That was one of the first things he did. The IRS in recent days said, you know, we're going to take tax returns with or without proof of your insurance, no questions asked, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing the administration sort of ease a lot of the burdens of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. As far as repeal and replacement efforts goes, we'll see a lot of that beginning to play out today through the spring. And the reason I say that is because we've got House Republicans under House Speaker Paul Ryan. They've come out with this 20-page outline, Obamacare Repeal and Replace Policy Brief and Resources, outlining a lot of things we've heard people on the center-right talk about in recent years. We're going to repeal, we're going to replace, we're going to do more health savings accounts, refundable tax credits, block grants for Medicaid, things of that nature. Meanwhile, we've got a plan in the Senate from Senators Bill Cassidy out of Louisiana and Susan Collins out of Maine, the Patient Freedom Act, on top of a plan from Senator Rand Paul, former presidential candidate in 2016, and Congressman Mark Sanford. They have the plan, the Paul-Sanford plan, have the backing of the House Freedom Caucus. Very important. That's Jim Jordan, other people that have been friends of this program and network for a long time as far as being guests, of course. Paul and Sanford have the plan there. They, when you look at, and you know, my apologies for the trees that I had to sacrifice for this interview. When you look at just the printouts, the Paul Sanford plan, much more detailed than the one-page outline from Senators Cassidy and Collins. Mm-hmm. Basically, the big difference is Cassidy and Collins want to allow states the option to keep doing an Obamacare-like healthcare program if they so choose.
Yeah.
The Paul Sanford plan would basically make a national sort of plan, and it's really just a, we're going to allow this, we're going to give you money for that kind of thing, and let states kind of handle it. On top of all that, Republican governors have outlined a healthcare plan that basically says, don't scrap the Affordable Care Act without a viable alternative. They're worried about Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And that's important, again, because I mentioned Medicaid block grants. That is one of the things that a lot of the Republicans or Republican plans do call for is Medicaid block grants.
You know, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if when the Democrats were formulating this massive and confusing and horrible legislation that it is, they didn't say behind closed doors that, you know, this bill, this Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is so big, so messy, so horrible that the Republicans are going to never be able to repeal this,
right?
Which we're tending to see.
Right. I think Democrats, their plan from the get-go was, look, if we can keep single-payer from coming to existence, we'll be able to say we're not in favor of single-payer.
Right.
But the plan B is, if this thing tanks, and it looks like it will, then we can rush in with the single-payer plan that we saw Bernie Sanders and even Hillary kind of tout last year in their presidential campaigns. None of the Republican plans, none of the Republicans on Capitol Hill, as far as the ones I've mentioned today, are in favor of single payer. So we'll see how things play out.
Let me ask you one more question, then, Fred, I'll let you ask a question. Or I was going to say let you butt in, but my dad said that's not appropriate language on a family radio.
But your dad's not here, so you can say it, right?
Fred's in charge. Jim DeMint was speaking at CPAC this past week, and he said, essentially, whoever, for those who don't know, Jim DeMint is a former senator, I believe, from South Carolina, and he's now the Heritage Foundation president. He said to the attendees at CPAC that he posed the rhetorical question, why don't the Republicans send the same repeal bill to President Trump that they sent to Obama's desk that was vetoed?
Right.
How come they don't do that?
That is a very good question, and a lot of people have wondered, where are you on this, Mr. President? You said, I'm going to repeal it on day one, and here we are on February 27th, last day of February. We're a month and 7 days into his administration. We still, it's not, you know, in the ash heap of history or whatever catchphrase you want to use. I think what we're seeing is similar to President Trump meeting today with healthcare or health insurance chief executives. They have deep pockets, and they also have very good lawyers. The reason I say that is because they have been selling plans to people, which is what the Affordable Care Act called for, since November 1st of last year, for this year. Mm. If you scrap it, you're taking money from them. If you take money from them, that means they're not going to have money to pay people that work for them. Jobs might be sacrificed and whatnot. And I think what they have figured out, as unfortunate as it seems, is that it's easy to say, I'm going to scrap it. It's another thing to actually do it and not make a negative situation that you're going to have to deal with while you're saying, I'm going to do jobs, jobs, jobs.
Mm-hmm. Chris, we're not likely going back to pre-Obamacare days.
No, I do not think so. And quite honestly, Republicans, people on the center-right, those with common sense would tell you the system was not perfect before Obamacare. That's, let's face it, that's part of the reason why we got Obamacare to begin with, was because the system did need reform. What we ended up with was a bigger mess than we had prior to the ACA in 2010. I think what we're going to try and see is a lot of consumer-driven free market approaches like health savings accounts, which would allow you to sock away money into an account. And, you know, God forbid something happens, you've got money stored away that you can help pay a deductible with and whatnot. Refundable tax credits is going to be another thing that you'll hear about, although there is a big debate. You'll see a lot of this more so on CNN and MSNBC. A lot of people are pointing out that a refundable tax credit is similar to, if it's not the same thing, as a subsidy. However, a subsidy is basically giving you the money to buy something, whereas the refundable tax credit gives you something back if you bought into it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the difference that some people on the center-right, the 501c4 groups, have made when I've asked them, you know, hey, what's the difference here?
So the poison pills, I guess we'll use that phrase for Obamacare, the poison pills were mandatory purchase.
Right.
Now they're punishing people with a fine.
I have not seen that in any of the plans that I've mentioned here today, from the 20-page outline from Speaker Ryan, the Cassidy Collins plan, and the one from Senator Paul and Mark Sanford.
So we're probably not going back to the mandatory you must purchase health insurance.
It doesn't look that way. Although, having said all that now, I did remember that I mentioned that under the Cassidy Collins plan, states would have the option to stick with Obamacare if they wanted to. However, and this is kind of weird, it's clear as mud, as we say in the South. Mm-hmm. The Cassidy Collins plan does repeal burdensome federal mandates imposed by the ACA, such as the individual mandate. So you might see arguments over that.
All right. Pre-existing conditions. For many people, that was a poison pill. Mm-hmm. The reason the insurance companies gave, one of the reasons they gave for a lot of them bailing out, was that we can't have people jumping on the train, as it were, when they find out they have a serious disease.
Exactly. You're telling an insurance company, you have to take these people, no questions asked, and then you find out after the fact you took on millions of people, potentially, and you found out they were a lot older and less healthy than the people that you needed to help offset the cost for you. And that's why we've seen United Healthcare and a number of insurance companies, Blue Cross has mentioned this as well, they've taken huge hits.
Yeah.
United Health was so bad that they just said, you know what, we're not even going to bother with exchanges.
And I think this is smart that the president is meeting with these health insurance company CEOs, because what you have here is, in order for them to come in and support the Affordable Care Act from the get-go, they needed assurance, or they needed their own insurance, so to speak, from the government that they won't tank. If they're taking these people with pre-existing conditions, et cetera, they needed a insurance policy, so to speak, that which was turned into be government subsidies to these insurance companies. Well, now their own CEOs who were in favor of the Affordable Care Act because they were promised subsidies are now meeting with the president who wants to scrap the Affordable Care Act, and he needs them to come out publicly and say, look, Obamacare was bad, Trump's plan's good. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
And quite frankly, he has a Trump card. I hate to use that word, but he has a Trump card right now because he's had a number of union leaders meeting with him. He's met with heads of state at this point. Mm-hmm. They've talked about new deals to do this or that, reshoring jobs and whatnot. So he's kind of got a, look, I've got these people, work with me on this. Yeah. We'll get it done. We'll make America great again. We'll make health insurance great again. Everybody wins.
Yeah, he has momentum.
Sure.
So to speak.
I think, to be honest with you, the way I see all this playing out, it's going to be at the fall before we really see something straightforward in a plan. Because it's easy to come out with a plan, but once they do it, a lot of people are going to try to add amendments and whatnot, mm-hmm. and we'll see things differently than all the, you know, the 50 pages of paper I've brought in with
right.
me today.
So the bottom line, you kind of started off with this. Folks who have signed up for Obamacare for this year, mm-hmm. that will continue.
Yes.
They will continue to be insured until at least late this year, December or maybe January of 2018.
Right, and let's not forget, too, the people with employer-sponsored insurance. In yeah. other words, insurance through their job, which is the bulk of people mm-hmm. right now in America. Even before Obamacare, even after Obamacare, the bulk of people with insurance in America have it through their job.
Mm-hmm.
Even those people are going to be sort of stuck with whatever plan they might have, good or bad,
right.
through this year. And then when it comes time for their HR department to kind of re-up or renegotiate, depending on what happens this year with all these lawmakers wheeling and dealing, we'll have a different plan, Lord willing, for 2018.
You know, I was speaking 6 months ago with a server at a local restaurant here in Tupelo, and he said, my dad actually asked him the question. This was when the Affordable Care Act was in the election cycle. Everybody was talking about it. And we asked the fella, are you insured? Do you have health insurance? If so, is it with your job or whatnot? And he said, no, I don't have health insurance. I'm not covered. And we said, you know, well, what prevents you from having health insurance? And he said, it's unaffordable. Either way, whether you go through the Affordable Care Act, which doesn't that sound great, an Affordable Care Act,
right.
but it's actually the most unaffordable act. And then whether you do that or you have it through your job, he said, it's unaffordable. I just don't have it. You know, I either, God forbid, he has an emergency. He hasn't had one yet. But mm-hmm. what do you do when you have to have a major surgery or something like that? What these some of these plans will do is they'll open up the market to more competition across state lines, and people like the server can actually buy an affordable plan that, because who doesn't want to be insured?
Right.
You know, everybody, of course, everybody wants health insurance, but when it's unaffordable, they don't want it. And so hopefully some of these plans will lower the cost.
Right. There have been a number of plans, and these are the subsidized plans in Obamacare that people were getting for, and I'm not making this number up, like $23 a month. But
wow.
a lot of these people found out that they had high deductibles. They might have, you know, had a doctor that would be willing to take them, but that doctor was hundreds of miles or hours away for them to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the negative stories that you've heard about a little bit, but not so much, because most of the mainstream media, let's face it, thought Obamacare was great. They were
yeah.
totally in favor of it. And as a result, they wanted to play up the millions of people who had health insurance for the first time because of the ACA. Although, as Jim DeMint's Heritage Foundation and other groups would tell you, that is kind of an arbitrary figure, because a number of these people did have health insurance prior to the ACA mm. becoming law. A lot of them might have actually had plans taken away from President Obama's administration. President Obama, of course, was the guy that said, if you like your plan, you can keep it, which was totally bogus. And he got how many ever Pinocchios for saying that?
Well, the main principle I'm getting out of all this is when the government gets their hands in something, it usually messes it up.
They would mess up a two-car parade most years. Yes.
Get them out. Trump's going to get the government out of health insurance. That's a good thing.
Well, Chris Woodward, we appreciate it. Chris Woodward from American Family Radio News
Thank
and
you.
OneNewsNow.com. Appreciate you coming in and keeping us up to date. Chris is doing 2-3 stories a week now. And really, Chris and Walker, I think we're getting into mm-hmm. the really interesting period on this. As you've outlined, Chris, there are a number of ideas that are now out there.
Right.
They have been put to paper. And it's really, for the most part, going to be up to the Republicans now who have been elected to Congress
right.
to come up with some kind of solution,
mm-hmm.
mixture, compromise on all of these different plans. And, boy, it better work.
And they have – I mean, they have no time really to come. I mean, they better – they're on the clock.
Yeah.
I'll say, because,
yeah.
I mean, another election is just around the corner, the midterm election I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got 6 months to maybe a year mm-hmm. to come up with something, or they'll be
One thing
out.
The Republicans can't do is in 2018, the Senate run on repealing Obamacare. They're going to get booed and laughed at if they – you've been running on that for 8 years.
I know.
It's
yeah.
time to replace it.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much,
yes,
Chris.
Thank you.
Sure, appreciate it. Well, I tell you what, some other things that were happening this weekend with regards to the Trump team. And you can perhaps, Walker, explain this a little bit more. I came in this morning to a headline where The president's main spokesman, the person that you see every day at these press briefings, Sean Spicer, collected cell phones from a large group of White House employees. What is that all about?
It's really bizarre. I'm not sure this has happened. We've had this happen in recent years. I know we haven't. The press secretary, who's essentially the point man when it comes to media, he's the head honcho in communicating President Trump's message to the American people and to the media. He called in about 12 or more of his closest aides in the White House and told them to set their phones on his desk. And why he did this is because there have been meetings with the press secretary, Sean Spicer, and his aides, about a dozen or so, of which these private meetings in the White House, details of these meetings are being leaked to the media. So he knows it's someone in his staff. Unfortunately, it's one of his White House aides who's leaking things to the media. So he calls in, this is from Politico, I'll read this directly, quote, last week after Spicer became aware that information had leaked out of a planning meeting with about a dozen of his communication staffers, he reconvened the group in his office to express his frustration over the number of private conversations and meetings that were showing up in unflattering news stories, according to a sources inside the room. Upon entering Sean Spicer's office for what one person briefed the gathering as a emergency meeting, staffers were told to dump their phones on a table for a, quote, phone check to prove they had nothing to hide. So wow. This is a very interesting story. You know, it's unfortunate, and some are probably criticizing Sean Spicer for this, but when you have leaks within your own, you know, staff, you can't be having that. And so he's taking measures that he has to take.
So they're after a mole.
Exactly.
That's what they're up to.
A mole that's very close to the White House.
This is, for the Trump administration, this has to be one of the most frustrating things they're facing right now. Because as you've mentioned, there have been so many times now, the mainstream media, the Democrats, are making hay of some kind of leak, some kind of information that only could have come from a fairly private meeting out there. And so I think Sean Spicer probably didn't come up with this idea. And I can imagine having to work for President Trump. President Trump, not too happy at all about this. Find out who it is. But you've got to be a little bit nervous. Put that cell phone down on my table.
Yeah.
And I'll let you know when you can get it back, because we're going to check and see what kind of phone calls, where you're going. Is it beyond your spouse, your kids, your aunt, your uncle?
Right.
And if it looks like it's going to someone else here in Washington, and God forbid it's going to a newspaper reporter somewhere,
right.
So they're out to find out the source of the leaks.
And he also had you interested. You said you know who directed this? Was it his idea? This says that Spicer, who consulted with White House counsel Don McGahn before calling the meeting, was accompanied by White House lawyers in the room. And so this wasn't a, you know, last-minute thing. He consulted with the lawyers and attorneys on whether he can do this, and he can, because every White House communication, no matter which role you're in, is subject to Public Records Act.
Wow.
So he had the authority to do this.
President Trump, a busy man, and when he's got problems, he's the type of guy, as they used to say, a dog with a bone, and he's not going to stop until he gets this resolved. So we'll have to wait and see. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues, a Monday edition. Many of our crew at NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, down in Orlando, Florida, and we'll be listening into many of our programs that'll be coming from there. Starting tomorrow. In the meantime, when we come back, we're going to be talking about Israel and the Jewish people, and we're going to be hearing from the United States' new ambassador to the United Nations, and she has made an incredible discovery in her new job. We'll be talking about that when we come back on Today's Issues, right after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.